Yeah, somebody flash blasted me and says that Marina Oswald died last year, 2006, and they had one daughter. So I'll double check that. But you would think there'd be a Wikipedia on her, and there isn't. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We'll take your final phone calls. Don't go away. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Let's go to our wild card line. Hi there.
Hey, George.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yes, sir.
Hey, listen, I want to congratulate you for all the good work you do.
Oh, you don't have to, but thank you.
And I want to put in a free plug for the Streamlink. That's really a great thing, anybody that can afford to do it.
Yeah, do you get it potted in the morning?
Well, I've been listening to it for about the last 4 or 5 years, and I just I play it off the Internet.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah, whenever I want to. So anybody, I mean, that's what.
So you do it on your own. That's cool.
Yeah, just whenever I want to listen to it.
Okay.
But the important thing I wanted to tell you was, you know, or there's a couple of things. One is it's crunch time, and the job you're doing is so vitally important right now because you're raising the consciousness of the nation. The people that can actually are actually tuning in and listening to you. You know, I just heard during the break you were talking about how we had to start caring for people. And this is what needs to be done, and it needs to be done right away. And if we don't get down to business and start doing that, there's going to be some awful repercussions. And so the work you're doing is really important.
Well, I'm looking at 2012, and I've got my own opinions on that time period and the Mayans. And I think we need to start doing what we're doing right now before it's too late.
No, you're exactly right. Keep up the good work and keep having the people on that can raise people's consciousness up. And we get enough people with a raised consciousness, a feeling of love and caring for other people, then we're going to have a better world and a safer world.
I think so, too.
Okay, one quick, or I'll try and do this pretty quick. I know you believe in reincarnation.
Yep.
I know you believe in synchronicities, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, a while back, I was falling asleep, and this was about 10 or so years ago. Before I fell asleep, I had this vision where I was in London. I think it was London or Baltimore or something, and I hurled myself from this bridge, and I fell into the water, and it was a suicide that I had done in a life that I had had. And after that incident, my business and everything just went to hell. Everything just went terrible for like 5, 6, 7 years.
Jeez.
It was horrible. And then I was in bed one night again, and this time I have a vision where I'm a medicine man, and I'm working with the, and this one I had like just such a perfect vision of everything about the tribe. They were Wyandots and pretty much where the location was, and even what they, how important the medicine man was to the, you know, the spiritual well-being of the tribe. You were basically the connection to the spiritual world. And after that, instantly, about maybe a few months after I got myself together, sold the business, I became a mental health counselor and a school counselor. And so I'm working in Toledo, Ohio, and I'm in this working for this family services. And there's a beautiful storm coming. I don't know if you've ever looked at storms, but there's this one. I like watching them. So I was sitting there watching this one, and I look up above, and I see this huge bird. I mean, this thing was bigger than a small plane, and it was maybe about 1,500 feet up, and it was dark, and it was going right into the clouds almost, and right into the lightning, and it was following along the Maumee River. It was heading west. And I go, man, that's really something. I've seen bald-headed eagles because where I lived, we had a few of them.
Sure.
And I said, this thing was like, you know, 5 or 6 times bigger.
Yeah.
I don't know.
A thunderbird.
Exactly. So what happened was, for a week, that bothered me. I go, what the heck is that? And I was laying in bed, and it dawned on me, just what you said, it was a thunderbird. Now, here's the interesting part. After I saw that thunderbird, I get a call from New Mexico, and they wanted me to work on the Navajo reservation. So I come down here, and I'm in Gallup, New Mexico. And guess what the symbol of the city is?
The bird, the thunderbird.
The thunderbird.
Yeah.
And I'm working with the Navajo people. And
that's great.
It turned out real well. So keep up the good work, and thanks a lot, okay,
George? Okay, my friend.
Bye.
Indeed. Let's move on. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, Hey George, I've been a long time listener. It's kind of strange, my first time call. I just had a quick question. You know how? I don't know. I'm sorry. let me gather my thoughts real quick.
Okay,
when
sure.
When I was a little kid, I always thought, you know, I grew up tigers and lions, and I always thought, you know, that'd be cool if there was a liger. You know, and then I saw, growing up, I saw, you know, Napoleon Dynamite a couple years ago, and I was like, oh, wow, someone else thought of this, too. And then later I was watching Discovery Channel, and someone actually breeded a liger.
Yep.
And I thought that was very interesting. And the reason why I bring that up is you were talking about Bigfoot earlier, and what struck me rather strange was what's known of Bigfoot is that he's kind of apish and like he's kind of human-like, but what's the possibility that someone tried to breed like an ape human?
Well, you know, this has been happening for so long, I'm not sure they did that. If it was recent, I'd say this thing escaped from a lab somewhere and got out. But I think this is a natural creature that's been around a long time. Some people think it's an extraterrestrial. I think it's a cross between man and an ape, and it's probably right in the middle because it does seem to show some caring emotions. I have a friend of mine who was just telling me a story about a puppy that fell into a pool just a few days ago where she lives in Missouri. And unfortunately, the little dog died, but this family had two dogs. The second dog, as late as it was, spotted the other dog floating and going under, jumped into the water, and pulled it out. Now, that's incredible that an animal would have that kind of knowledge of safety and would know what to do. And, you know, we've heard stories where dogs and animals have saved humans, but actually went down and pulled out this little puppy from the bottom of this pool and pulled it up real fast, but it was too late, sadly enough. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Good.
Long-time listener with StreamLink and finally got through after 10 years of trying.
Good for
you. I'll win the lotto tomorrow night now, I guess.
That's next.
Listened to the JFK show last night. Loved it. I've listened to it last year, too. And there's always been a couple things that's always bothered me of the JFK assassination. And I was born in 66, so I wasn't around when that happened.
Right.
But the one thing I discovered was, I discovered it actually last year after listening to your show. I was just messing around on YouTube looking at JFK clips and stuff. And there's one that caught my eye, and I've never seen it before except for last year. And if you go on Google and you do the JFK assassination, and you'll see different video clips. There's one where the limo's leaving Love Field, and the two Secret Service agents run up to grab the handles on the back of the Lincoln.
Okay.
And the car right behind the Lincoln, another Secret Service agent stood up, and, well, there's no audio, so you can't hear it, but he's obviously yelling something at him, and the guys turn around, and both guys just raise their hands up in the air like, what? You know,
yeah.
What do you want us to do?
Right, right.
And then they kind of stop, and JFK's car is already moving, and then the other car comes up, and they, again, the one guy on the right side of the car actually lifts his hands up over his head in the air like, What are you making us do this for? At least three times.
Like they're perplexed?
What's that? Yeah, like perplexed. Like,
yeah.
What are you, why can't we be on the car? Because obviously they should have been on the car. That's what those handles are for.
Right.
And I've never heard anybody, you know, people you've had on and when I've watched stuff on, like, you know, on cable and that, I've never seen that footage anywhere. But it is on Google, and it's really strange.
I'd like to look at that. I don't know if I've seen it, and it just passed through me, but I'd like to take a look at that.
If you put in JFK assassination on the very first page, it's on there, and it says JFK assassination. It says Secret Service stand down. And it's just a short clip. It's only like 2 minutes, but it just baffles me, you know, that even the Secret Service agents are like, what do you mean? Like
they want to do this.
Get out of there,
yeah.
Get out of there.
They want to do their job, and they're being told not to.
Right, because as you know, if they would have been there, probably the first shot, the one Secret Service guy probably would have gotten hit. The second guy would have dove on JFK in the story. Nothing else would have happened.
Exactly.
The other thing that's always bothered me is whenever you look at the footage of the motorcade through Dallas.
The Zapruder film.
Well, not necessarily the Zapruder film, but before that. Everybody on the streets, they're 10, 12 people deep, they're packed, and he makes the one turn, and it's just packed, and then he turns on in front of the school book depository, and there's like 40 people there. That whole big area, the grass.
They changed the park. They changed that route.
Right.
And maybe not a lot of people picked up on that.
But I just thought it was weird. But when you look at footage, you know, you can still see the people lying on the other streets just, you know, 6-7 deep.
Oh, yeah, like it's a huge parade.
Right, and all of a sudden there's, like, nobody.
Yeah.
And that always made me wonder, it's like, the, you know, because I always heard reports like, we were trying to stand here and Secret Service flashed their badge and shushed us out.
Well, here's something that always baffled me. They changed the direction to go in front of the school book depository.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't publicized. How did Oswald know that if he was indeed involved and up there in the school book depository with a rifle?
Well, I personally think he was still in the second floor lunchroom drinking a Coke waiting for a phone
call. He probably was. And he was exactly what he said he was, a patsy.
And you know, just kind of a funny thing on it, not that the JFK assassination was funny, but you know how you get a group of people and you sit around and you talk about it and they say, gosh, you know, if I had a time machine, I wish I could go back and try and prevent the assassination or this and that. And I remember reading a story when I was in grade school about time travel when they went to hunt the dinosaurs and they got off the path and changed the future and stuff like that. So I thought, well, you don't want to go back and change what happened. You want to observe. But I said, if I could do one thing, I would go back and I would, just to see what would happen in the future, I would go back if I could, if Oswald is in the second floor lunchroom, I would like to go back, have a gun, you know, say you're coming with me, march him down the street, and I want him standing right in front of the Stenson Freeway sign, waving at Zagruder while the limo goes by, and then let the government try to cover that up.
Yeah, that's a good point. Hey, thanks for the call.
You're welcome. Thanks, George.
Next up, sure thing. West of the Rockies, you're with us. Hi there. Hello. Yep, go ahead, please.
Oh, hi, George.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
My name is Mike, and I'm over here in southwest Idaho somewhere.
Okay, Mike.
Anyway, I wanted to relate this little story that happened when I was about 8 years old back in about 1958.
Okay.
And I had a sister. Well, I still have my sister, but, I mean, at the time she was about six, and she was a real snot. I mean, she would get me in trouble.
As sisters always are.
Right? This one here particularly. But, well, you know, I love my sister. Today she's changed.
Yeah.
But anyway, at that time, I thought she was the rottenest thing on the earth. Well, anyway, we went to visit my grandparents in California and at their ranch house. So we it was just before Halloween, and I thought, well, I'm going to get back at her. So I went and got the sheet, cut two holes in it, and got a flashlight, and I was in the back bedroom. And I come around to the center bedroom where my kid brother and sister were. Well, they had a nightlight in there, so I could see where they were at, you know, and my dog was in there with them. I had a Australian Shepherd. So I walked in there, and I creeped in, and all of a sudden I flipped on the flashlight and started, ooh, you know, and, oh, man, they come up out of that bed. And I mean, their eyes are like big as silver dollars, and they're screaming and carrying on. Well, about that time, the light flipped on. My grandmother come in there, and I guess she grabbed a belt or something and just pulled the sheet off me and started wailing on me. The more she wailed on me, the more I laughed. And the more I laughed, it seemed like the more she whooped on me. But then finally, it just, I don't know how long it was that she was whacking on me, but anyway, I was laughing so much, I guess I got her to laughing, and she got to looking at my brother and sister, and the dog was sitting there, woo, you know, it was the funniest thing I'd ever, I'll never forget it. But my kid sister and my kid brother would not go to sleep without a nightlight on from that time on. Not at all.
Even though you were Casper, the friendly ghost.
Yeah, you know, it was really hilarious, but I had to kind of call you and relate that to you, you know. It was just something that, you know, it's kept with me all these years. I tell it once in a while, and, you know, me and my brother will talk about it, but now my sister, she don't want to talk at all about it. So, you know, but I thought it was kind of a funny story to tell you.
Yeah, those little kid stories are great.
Oh, it's really a lot of fun.
Great memories there. Great memories. Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George. You know, I just wanted to say that what on the JFK thing, one of the bullets that shot JFK through his neck in a downward trajectory, and the projectile exited JFK's neck and entered Governor Connally's chest. The way that the commission reported it was that it was just a normal sequence, just a regular event, the way it was supposed to happen. JFK grabbed his neck. Why? Because he got shot first. And secondly, Connally grabbed his chest because that's the way things are supposed to be. But no, the sensory nerves in the chest are much more acute, much more
pronounced, sensitive
to the neck. And the way it should have been, because this is where they blew it, Connolly should have grabbed his chest first before Kennedy grabbed his neck. Because I know it sounds a little complicated, but when the bullet went through JFK's neck and into Connolly's chest, they reported that the JFK grabbed his neck first and Connolly grabbed his neck or grabbed his chest secondly. It should have been the other way around, because the way the nerves are in the pleural area of our chest, anybody that's ever had pleurisy, they had knife-like pain, it's like horror.
Sure.
It hurts badly. Kennedy, it should have been in reverse, but because they thought that that's the way that the public wanted to see it, they blew it. It should have been in reverse, and they didn't report it that way.
Are
you following me here?
Yeah, but what does it all mean, if you're correct?
What it means is that it's once again that the Warren Commission report was so tarnished, and it was like it's something that was like almost like preconceived. I remember when I had a paper out, and I thought, why back then? Why did the Warren Commission report come out with a report so fast? It was almost like it was preconceived. They wanted to make it look good, like an incredible dance step, and it didn't work out that way. The way it worked out was that they stumbled over themselves, and what I'm telling you is just one of the ways that they stumbled over themselves. You do not feel the same pain in your chest as you do in your neck. Kennedy should have grabbed his neck after Connolly grabbed his chest.
See, and I'm not even sure he was grabbing or reaching for his neck. I think those arms went up in a reaction.
It could have been, but the way the report went was they said he grabbed his neck because that's the way it's supposed to be. It went through his neck into Connolly's chest, and they wanted to make it look like a picture of perfection of how things are supposed to be. That's why I always thought that the Warren Commission report is so bogus.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, I'm not sure history will prove us right or not, but I'll tell you what, every anniversary date, we will have more and more information, because I'm not going to let that rest, because it's way beyond just the assassination. It's why. And what has happened to all of us since that's happened? Because, you know what? We cannot let it occur. And, you know, as long as I can, I'll keep doing what I'm doing, because one day someone will stand up and say enough is enough, because we got to fight back some way. I mean, it's just ludicrous. I'm going to be back in just a moment. Glenn Beck, talk show host, is going to pop in for a bit. We're going to chat with him about his new work, too. It's called An Inconvenient Book. So that's next on Coast to Coast AM. I'll be right back. If you want to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. Back in a moment. Yes, and in a moment, talk show host, radio talk show host, also a host of his own CNN headline program, Glenn Beck joins us to talk about his new work called An Inconvenient Book. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, I don't agree with everything that national radio and television talk show host Glenn Beck spouts. I don't agree with a lot of the things he says. But in his new work, An Inconvenient Book, pretty fascinating stuff. Glenn, you're pretty controversial these days, but you do it in such a way that people enjoy listening and also watching you on CNN and listen to your show. I mean, why so tough these days?
You know, I got to tell you, I don't think I'm that controversial. You know, Anderson Cooper just did an hour-long interview with me, I don't even know when, Friday. And he said, you know, you get this controversial rap, he said, but I just read the book. He said, A, it's really funny. B, it's all common sense. Where's the controversy? And I said, the controversy comes in the agendas. There is no controversy in common sense. It's the agendas surrounding each of the problems that causes the controversy. You've got to make me into a racist. You got to make me into a hate monger. You got to make me into somebody that, you know, is just ringing the bell saying Hillary Clinton is killing all the, her opponents. I mean, you got to do that. That way we don't actually talk about the problems, or God forbid we hit the solutions.
See, I get emails from people who say that you attack Ron Paul supporters, that you attack those who believe conspiracy of 9/11.
Let me take the Ron Paul supporters.
All right, we'll start
with that. Know me, George.
Of course, I know you well.
I'm probably this close to Ron Paul in opinions. You probably don't have a major talk show host that is as close to Ron Paul in ideology as me. Here's what happened. First of all, I never said that. A guest said that. The second part of that is I stand by what I did say, and that is I believe this Ron Paul campaign has been hijacked by radical elements on the left and the right, people that are anarchists. Now, that doesn't mean that the average Ron Paul supporter is that. By no stretch of the imagination do I believe that. But there are those elements. And it's not just the Ron Paul movement. Quite frankly, there are members of this kind of movement in the Democratic Party as well. We just have to be very, very careful of aligning ourselves with absolute anarchists or radicals. Now, that doesn't mean, and I've tried to make this very clear as well, I don't think Ron Paul is a radical. I don't think Ron Paul is wanting anarchy. And I don't think the average Ron Paul supporter does. But you can't tell me that there aren't those that are hiding behind Ron Paul that want that.
Don't you think that in this day and age that one of the major problems with this country today and most of the media, people just don't listen to other people. They're screaming, they're yelling. Yeah.
George, they hear what they want to hear. You know, look. You and I disagree on an awful lot, but you know what? We probably agree on more. And the biggest thing that we agree on is that we're both decent people. I know you, George. You don't hate America. You don't hate people that have a different opinion, and neither do I. So why can't we solve problems? The answer is we can, but not if we allow those who are trying to lead us separate us.
Do you see everything today, Glenn, is emotional? It's not discussion, it's passion. Whether it's global warming, whether it's 9/11, whether it's whether we should be in Iraq or not, there's no talk anymore.
Yeah,
it's all screaming.
Yeah, it's not passion, because I'm passionate about a lot of what I believe. I think I respect people who are passionate on what they believe, because these are passionate times we're living in, and these are some of the biggest issues this country has ever faced. I used to say are quite possibly the biggest issues. They are. This is bigger than what we faced in World War II, because it is all-encompassing. The enemies are all around us now. And so I want you to be passionate, but I want you to be tethered to reason. We've got to fix reason in her seat. We have got to make sure that we look for actual truth. And one of the biggest problems is political correctness. It stops us from saying the truth. It scares us. They try to scare us by calling us racist. I mean, George, I mean, you've been following what's been happening with me and the kidnappings in Laredo?
Yes.
I've got a
yes.
U.S. congressman calling me a racist. Exactly how am I a racist for saying that 21 Hispanic Americans are still missing and I'm demanding answers? How does that make me a racist?
You're not.
Just calling me a racist, well, then you can stop talking about the issue. Well, you know what? It's not going to work with me. I'm not afraid of being called. I've been called a racist. I've been called a hate monger. I've been called a warmonger. I've been called everything under the sun by a lot bigger people than a congressman from Texas. I don't care anymore. I just care about the issues. I care about my country.
In your work, an inconvenient book, Real Solutions to the World's Biggest Problems, with a little tongue-in-cheek on a lot of these things, you quote John Edwards talking about how we have two Americas now.
Yeah.
And you know what? He might be right, Glenn. We are going down a path of those who have and those who do not have. And that gap has got to be pushed together.
Well, hang on just a second. First of all, don't don't talk to me about the haves and the have-nots while you're building a 21,000 square foot home and you're clear cutting your property for a soccer field in your backyard.
No, you're talking
you're
about
me to plant a tree.
You're talking about John Edwards,
yeah,
not me.
No, please don't talk to me about. Yeah, not you. Don't talk to me about that, John Edwards. I mean, you know, you got a trailer park at the end of your driveway. That's as close as you get to actual seeing poverty, and you don't see it from your house at the end of your driveway because it's too far away from the end of your driveway. But with that being said, we do have a gap. But you know what? More people have we have brought the standard of living up in this country higher than it has ever been in the history of the world. Now, is there poverty? Absolutely. But if I may quote Abraham Lincoln, he said it is immoral and unconstitutional to redistribute wealth. He said instead of pulling down a wealthy man's house, we should encourage those to build up their own houses. And what we've done is we have created a whole generation of people that expect to be wealthy. Our children graduate and they expect to have the same kind of lifestyles that their parents have. Well, you know what? We busted our butt this lifestyle. We all worked hard. You know, I just watched Pursuit of Happiness last night. Have you seen that movie?
Yes.
That's a great movie.
A great movie.
And as I'm watching it, I'm thinking to myself the whole time, how do I find that person? How do I help that person? How do I find the person who is busting their butt? My family and I tell you this not like, hey, just as a cap to that story, is that about a month and a half ago, my family and I went to a soup kitchen, and we were cooking food for the homeless, and we were feeding and everything else. And, you know, you could see people who were coming up to the line that were working the system. And then there were others there that you could tell were really working hard. They were either down on their luck or they had just had a string of bad things that happened to them, and they just were resetting their life. Those people, man, I want to help those people every step of the way. Those who are there and just want to coast, why should I float them? It's immoral. People must carry themselves. We are here to make the most out of ourselves and grow and struggle. We need to help each other, but we certainly don't need to carry each other if you can walk.
Absolutely. You know, that's the key point. If you can walk.
If you can walk.
We're here to help people who can't help themselves.
You know, there's a chapter in the book that talks about poverty. And it's going to sound really insensitive, but, you know, you have to read the whole chapter. But the average person living in poverty, man and wife, the total hours worked per week between man and wife is 40. Well, that's 20 hours apiece. Now, if you can't work because, you know, you're staying home taking care of the kids and really busting your butt to take care of the kids, and you're handicapped or you're whatever, and you can only work 20 hours, good, then give me the best 20 hours you can, and I'll help make the difference. But I'm not gonna hold you up if you can actually work 40 hours. If those couples that are in the poverty line that only work 20 hours apiece, if they both worked 40 hours, 80% of them would be totally fine.
Of course, don't you think government also needs to create a new taxation to help those people in the middle who are basically propping up the rest of this nation?
Why are we taxing people? Why do we want to redistribute wealth? It is not constitutional. I mean, hey, Ron Paul supporters, here I am. This is how close I am.
This is it.
It is unconstitutional to redistribute wealth. When did we start buying into the socialist ideology? Let people make money. Let people encourage. Let me ask you this, George. I know you. I know you are a good man. I know you believe in the power of prayer. I know you believe in the goodness of people. Tell me, sir, the last time you felt charity, real, true, from the heart charity on April 15th. Have you ever?
No. We need to abolish the income tax and create a fair system.
Yeah. Let everybody look. Look, I am fortunate enough to be in a good tax bracket. Well, I'm paying what I believe is more than my fair share of taxes. The top 1% of this nation pays 40% of the bill. The top 10% pays 70% of the bill. Now, let me ask you, the top 1%, they take in 20% of the income, but they're paying 40% of the bill. What exactly, George, is their fair share?
There is no fair share on the whole system.
No.
You know, corporations should pay, I believe, and also people should have almost 100% of their income, and we need to create some kind of use tax or something that allows us to tax this illicit drug money that comes in. I mean, that's not getting taxed.
The rest of the world is paying, all these socialist countries that lived through socialism, they're paying anywhere from 13 to 17% flat tax, and they're making more money than you could possibly imagine. You eliminate all loopholes, none. Just how much did you make? Give me 17% of that, period. Or do a use tax. I'm fine with that.
Yep.
But the problem with the use tax is it'll become special interest. Well, wait a minute. Oh, hang on. You're buying a boat? Oh, well, you should pay more because who can afford a boat? And you gear that special interest up again. It is the mentality to tax the rich.
Well, but there's got to be a way that they can give Americans the use of their money, because what's going on right now just isn't fair.
To who?
To the rich,
you're right.
No, to anybody. It's just the entire system.
You know what? I'll give you that. If you tell me that the bottom 50%, of this country pays 3%, we have more people living, we have more people in this country getting more back than they're putting in than ever before. In fact, we have a majority of people now getting more back than they put in. They're being carried by the wealthy. Now, that doesn't mean that we say, oh my gosh, look at the wealthy, poor wealthy, and cry me a river. The wealthy are doing great in this country. But we should celebrate that. We should encourage people to make money. We should say, be successful, innovate. The rich in this country, and try this on for size, those that are considered the rich, the vast majority are small business owners. Now, how many poor people have you worked for, George? How many poor people run small businesses? You tell me, if you take my, and I'm a small business guy, I was about to start a new division that has nothing to do with broadcast. It would have employed about an additional 40 people. Now, when I was worried about making my $695 rent 8 years ago, I didn't employ anybody. I now employ about 40 people.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to add another 40 people, but I am so concerned in this country on what they're going to do to my taxes,
yep,
that they're going to jack my taxes up so high, I'm not going to start that division until I know for sure what they're going to do. So who suffers, me or the 40 people that I would have employed?
I don't blame you. Inconvenient book sounds a little like Inconvenient Truth. Any kind of
there's more
parody
truth in
there?
This one. That's what makes it so inconvenient. No agenda, just the truth.
Global warming. I've only got about a minute or so left here, Glenn. What do you think?
It's socialism. Look, here's the deal, George. I was reading a book to my son about the dinosaurs. The first paragraph said, millions of years ago, when the Earth was a lot warmer and a lot wetter. That's how it started. It was a science book. The world is warming. Things are happening. But the Earth is alive. Should we take care of it? You damn right we should. We are stewards, and we're going to be held responsible by our Creator on what we did to His creation. So we should be. But this is not about anything other than a redistribution of wealth. This, for so many people, is about one world government and about global socialism. And let me tell you something. If anybody wants to talk about taxes and say, hey, that wealthiest 1%, we ought to screw them, let me tell you something. On the global scale, America is the wealthiest 1%. The poorest in America are going to be taxed for the restraining of Africa and not letting them grow.
The name of the book, An Inconvenient Book, by Glenn Beck, national radio talk show host and host of his own program on CNN. You might not agree with Glenn. I don't, on a lot of his issues at all. But it's always nice to hear other views, isn't it?
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden. And I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century, your voice is always welcome here on my radio. Call in with your space transmitter or your telephone. And I turned on my see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast.
Ah, yes, for Kiris Coburn, Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.